Okay, just everyone unmute yourself for the future. Okay. Hello everyone, welcome back to the Voice of the Voiceless on CJLO 1690 AM. I'm your host, Judy, and we have here my co-host, Mariam.
Hello everyone.
How are you feeling today?
I'm feeling good. Yeah. This is a special episode. Today we are with a very special guest. Her name is Scarlett, and I will be presenting her. But Judy, do you want to say anything before and tell me how you feel also today?
I'm feeling good. I'm excited as well to today's episode, as it's going to be a very nice and interesting topics that we're going to have with Scarlett. And we're going to be talking about many different things that related to being an Arab in the West and the journey towards like having kids in the West and many more topics.
Yeah, and Scarlett Jibara is here with us today on The Voice of the... Hi, Scarlett, how are you?
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm happy that you're here. Yeah, but quickly, Scarlett Jibara is a Lebanese-Canadian mother, student, and researcher. She's pursuing a master's degree at HEC while working and raising two beautiful daughters that I was very happy to see a few weeks ago.
Thank you, Mariam.
And we are welcoming her on our show today to share her journey to Canada and how she ended up pursuing graduate studies and how she tries to balance it all so gracefully. So welcome to our show, Scarlett.
And, thank you very much.
We are very happy for you to be here. This is our first time introducing a master's student actually on our show. So it's very exciting to hear your journey and to get to know more of you and what you do. Tell us about who you are and what you do. And if I missed anything, or I'd be happy for you to share it with us all.
Thank you for the lovely introduction. So my name is Scarlett. I'm a graduate student at HEC Montreal. I'm studying UX, user experience. It's been 9 years I'm here in Canada, and I have two young daughters, 6 and 8 year old, and I'm trying to juggle all of this. And I'm happy to share more about my journey.
I'm very happy for you to be here.
Me too. I'm happy to hear your story.
So I can start quickly by talking about maybe just some general questions. So we know that you came. So let's start like from the beginning. So you came to Canada and you were in Lebanon before that, correct?
Yes, I lived all my childhood and early adulthood. So I came to Canada. Okay. I was 23. Okay. And I came because I married a Lebanese Canadian and I had to move here. And soon after, I had my first born, my first child, my daughter, Jade. And so I went from being in Lebanon in my comfort zone to being an immigrant in Canada and having a baby. So it was a big year for me.
And
how was this?
I'm sorry?
That was all in 1 year?
That was all in 1 year, yeah. And my dad has passed away that same year. So it's one of like the big years that every person have, like a big year in their life. That was a big change for me. But I learned how to adapt and to make the best of it. At first, it was very difficult. That was back in end of 2016.
Okay. So almost 10 years ago. Okay.
Almost 10 years.
Yeah. Now, I'm sure you have to like really try to cope with it and move on. And, you know, I think like having kids and things like that really made you busy. And did you also work at that time or?
I did not work because I had like both pregnancy close together. So I had a 2 year gap between my kids. But when my youngest was two, I started working at IKEA as a kitchen designer because my undergrad is interior design. I studied in Lebanon interior design. So it was more like, it was a big change moving to a new country, but also, I mean, we adapt, we try to do the best that we can, and we grow by loving it at the end. So now I feel I'm in a good place now, and I wouldn't have it any other way. So it's all part of the process. This is what I tell my colleagues, my friends, those who find it hard, like going through this change, like trust the process, and we grow by change. So it's a good thing at the end.
Yeah, it's very nice how you mentioned process. Like, it's always important to, like, because we always see like the hardships and like, oh, like, why did we do that? We shouldn't have done this. But like then afterwards, after a few years, we see like, oh, wow, okay, I had to face all of that just to come to this point where I'm like,
exactly,
okay, I'm thankful for where I am right now. So it's really inspiring, actually. And it gives, like, despite all the hardships, there's always hope and there's always something planned for you.
Exactly.
So would that, would you say your first year in Canada, would that be like a specific turning point in your life that completely changed a lot of things, or would there be another, maybe a specific turning point throughout your life or your life here in Canada that you could you know, tell us about?
I would say it's mostly gradual. Most people think of it like a specific event that changed the course of your life. But I would say it's the persistence and the faith that you have, the small voice inside of you that pushes you to be better, to grow, as I said. So for me, it was a process. The change was a bit... it was a bit stressful for me. The first 2 years were hard on me emotionally, but I always try to look at the long term, that all the possibilities and opportunities I can have here in Canada for me and for my daughters. So it was gradual, and I tried to make the best of it. And also, I would like to point out that the support system is very, very important for anyone going through this change. Having family members, friends that support you, good examples in your circle, it makes you want to achieve higher, do better, look at the half full of the glass. So that was a good thing for me as well.
Yeah, that's really beautiful. I think that's the way maybe that helped you cope and helped you, like, push through having a community around you. They say that it takes a village, right? It takes a lot of people to help you achieve what you want and what you dream of. So yeah, coping and also hoping for the better and being motivated is something that I understood from what you said. So that's really beautiful. Yeah,
it's very beautiful said, to be honest. Like, as we said, like, it's the way you explained it and everything, it's really nice how you said it. A question came up to my mind, to be honest, like, because you said you studied your undergrad was interior design, but what made you change into UX, user experience? Like, what made you want to go to that path
for user experience?
UX, yeah.
Yes, so I'm always into tech. I've always had it in me. Like, as long as I remember, I loved computers. I love phone. You know, in the village where I grew up, any elderly struggling with any piece of technology, I would always find myself wanting to help, thinking of the design of every software and so on. So, at the time when I was doing my graduate studies, I didn't have that opportunity, or I wasn't aware. It wasn't that known as a major back in like 10 years ago. But it combines my love for design with technology. And with that comes the psychology of the people. And I find it's a very interesting intersection between business, psychology, design, technology, that you make electronic interfaces, digital interfaces, be more user-friendly for the people. So it has a social good behind it that I feel it's motivating as well as a career.
Yeah, no, Scarlett said it very, very, very nicely. If you can maybe describe what user experience, well, you did already describe what user experience is. And the link, I would say, interior design has some sort of link with user experience, because interior design, you are still making something like for a person, and you're trying
definitely.
To you're trying to make it as most like comfortable and as most the look and the touch and the textures, like it has to be pleasing to the person using it. So there are also similarities to interior design with UX. So that's pretty cool. Yeah.
Definitely. You're still meeting the need of the client. It's still a need, and it's still like a problem, and you're finding solution, because it's a misconception when people say interior design, it's the look and the aesthetic, but mostly like, how can I make space for this? How can I make the flow better? So it has a lot of problem solving. So as you said, it's very similar.
Yeah. It's related to the psychology as well. Because the colors, also the things that you would pick in interior design, affects how the people might interpret it, or like how they might see it and everything. You're right.
100%.
Do you want to start with the question? Or
I think we can jump to a very different topic, but part of your journey in Canada and things like that. So I wanted to ask you about your daughters. they're very amazing daughters, and you love them so much dearly, and we can all see that, and I'm so happy that you found the happiness and joy in them. So I was asking, I wanted to ask you about how you're trying to raise kids with in Canada, as you said, everybody knows here, you're a Lebanese person who came to Canada. So my question is, how do you try to find the right balance in raising kids within Arabic traditions and cultures, while also encouraging their integration within the Canadian society, at school, at any environment that they're in?
Yes, so that's a great point. You are you're asking me a question that many, many immigrants from everywhere in the world face. I say as duty for us as parents is to really create like a soft balance between the two, because you want them to have both, because that's the reality of things. They are Lebanese in blood, but they're growing up in Canada, so they're Canadian too, and they have to be proud of the country where they're growing, and they're having all those security given to them in this, we feel blessed that we're here as well. So for me, rules are super important. We try to visit home. Lebanon for me is every 2-3 years. And we have it in our everyday life when it comes to food, when it comes to our way of celebrating our traditions. So all that is part of it. And also, we're also up to date with what's happening in the museums, in their friends' birthdays, activities, school. So it's mixed. It's a blend of both, that we try to be active in both worlds.
I think the beauty of like our culture is that you can enjoy the richness and the complexities of it, like the in terms of the culture, in terms of the food, in terms of the music, in terms of the media, the entertainment. You can enjoy it outside of your country, And you can always be connected also online and things like that. I feel like technology has helped us a lot, right, to connect with our country through social media and things like that. Yeah.
And what helps is there is a lot of other Lebanese and Arabs in Laval and in our neighborhood. So I'm always happy when my kids get to speak their language with other kids. And I find this is really special. But I do put an effort also in those online groups that we have to have play dates as well with other Arab families, to keep that balance in our lives.
Yeah, for sure. That's a very good way to like approach it and like try to integrate the culture and the language. Do you find it hard like to teach them the language as well? Because I feel like here they use everyday language that they use is either French or English. Mm-hmm. So it's very hard to make them also learn Arabic language because it's very complex too. And if you don't talking it like all the time, it would be hard, like, you know.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, this is something I regret a bit, because when they were very young, I used to speak to them in English. I wanted them to be good in English because I thought they are growing up in a French garderie, French school, French community. So I want their English to be good because bilingual is good and English is all over the world. Mm-hmm. And then I focused on English, and then I wanted to integrate the Arabic. It was more like not their mother tongue, but like their third language. But also we have to accept the fact that we cannot be so hard on them. We struggle ourselves with our second and third language. So for me, as long as they understand it and they have the chance to talk to my grandmother, my mother, their grandmother in Arabic, that's good practice. And when we visit back Lebanon, that's good practice. So yeah, they do practice, but it's not.
I'm guessing it's a big challenge. They're living in Canada. It's really hard for them to put that in their minds and to keep that language in their mind. It's as they grow up also, I think they will realize that, you know, Arabic is an important language, and they will eventually you know, try to learn it on their own or be more curious when they grow up. So as long as we try to raise our kids in a multicultural setting, they will stay curious, like, forever. They will be curious about their country in Canada, but they also will be curious as to what's happening in Lebanon and things like that. So definitely challenging, but also very rewarding. Exactly. And it just makes them smarter and more cultured.
Being diverse as well.
Exactly. Yeah, that's very cool to have, and we're lucky to have that also as Arabs in Canada. So we wanted to also and also you're studying and you're working I believe part-time at HEC. Can you tell us maybe any tips, or how do you try to balance
watermelons we say in Lebanon.
Watermelons.
How do you hold all those watermelons?
Watermelons. How do you like try to balance all of that and make it seem like as if you're like making it seem so easy, but you know, maybe it's not easy? How do you try to do that all together?
I try to be organized, and the calendar is my friend, really, because you have so much on your head that you really, really forget things. So I try to log everything in my calendar with a reminder a week ahead, a day ahead, 3 hours before. So I try to keep organized that way, and I have chunks of time that I dedicate only for my kids. Let's say Saturday, Sunday is for them. So this is how I keep my balance. That way, even if I'm busy during the week, at least I get done with my studies and work, and I have the weekends with them, because childhood passes really fast. And I don't want to miss on those years. So, and for my work, I took part-time work. But I want to stress here how important it is to have a spouse or a partner that supports you in that journey, because you have to balance each other. Let's say a day or 2 hours I have an exam. This is where my partner would help me more. And for other mothers that are hearing me, I think it's very important to learn to ask for help when we need it, because as mothers, we try to take a lot on our plate. And we're proud of all the things that we get done, but it's also strength when we ask our friends, close friends, family members, just like, hey, can you help me out with this and that? That would be really, really helpful.
Yeah, so you're saying don't be scared to ask for help.
No, I've done it. And, you know, sometimes my spouse can't. So I call my close friend, hey, can you have the kids for a play date? I'll get them Play-Doh and they play a bit. And it will save me the hassle of 2-3 hours, you know?
Yeah, you can get your work done and like, and then they will have fun. And it's like, you know, it's helpful. You're right.
Exactly.
I'm also thinking about your answer here. You're always coming back to community. You're always saying that we always need people around us to help us achieve what we need to do. Did you find it difficult in Canada to find the right people and the right help to raise your kids and to help you find this balance of work, of study, of motherhood? How did you find it here when you, especially let's say
at the
first years in Canada? Because now I'm sure you've settled and you found what you need, but at first, how did you find it difficult? Did you find it easy? What was the process, if you could quickly explain it to us?
Of course, honestly, it is harder, because in Lebanon, you're built in the system where you have your cousins, you come to this world and you have the community just around you. So here you have to be proactive. As immigrants, we have to be proactive. We can't say that, oh, there's no community and we just like give up on that. I think you have to do an effort. Go find your people. Go to the events where it matters to you, where you can find people with similar mindset and thoughts. So I think as much as you give it, it gives you back. Community. It exists, but you have to be proactive and find the people that you want in your circle.
What are some things that you did when you first came here to find your communities, if you remember?
The first thing I remember, I found that Facebook group that says Lebanese in Montreal, and that was my go-to for anything. I remember my fridge wasn't working one day, and I just wrote on that group, hey, can somebody come fix my fridge? And I was amazed. Anything I would find, you know, somebody that can
help
me. And they have events, and also the church in my neighborhood. So all of that helps.
That's amazing.
Putting yourself out there.
Exactly. Yeah, and not being scared to ask for help. I think that's the main point. Yeah. I can continue on with another question. If you were you ever, let's say, overwhelmed with anything that happened, and how did you try to cope or push through? Again, we mentioned the aspect of community. Is there anything else that helped you push through or cope when times were a bit difficult and overwhelming?
Yeah, other than community and family, I would say faith for me. Having faith is really a very strong a force that can help you pass through the darkest time. So everyone has their own way of believing and their different religions and faiths, but hanging on to something, having that faith, is really very, very powerful in going through tough times. So that was a big one for me.
Yeah.
pushed you to go through the pain and like have trust in God that He would, it's all a plan that would lead to something more beautiful and better.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's
no,
very nice way.
That's very beautiful. Yeah. I have another. Yeah. Go ahead, Judy. Yeah.
I have a question, but it's not related to what we're talking about, but it's also related to your studying again. I don't know if you mentioned, like, how did you decide to go back to studying? Because I don't think we touched on that. I'm just curious, like, how did you decide, like, oh, I'm going to go back to studying after a while of not studying and then...
Yeah. So I was looking for work and I tried working in interior design. I tried different companies and I felt it wasn't that satisfying intellectually for me. I felt like I have, you know, the curiosity to dig deeper a bit. It's the little scientist in every one of us, I think. Like, I feel our kids are a bit artsy and scientists. So I felt like, why not? You know, we have that program here in Quebec that supports us a bit financially. And my kids don't need me as much as they were when they were younger. So I find myself really stagnant. Is this what I'm going to do forever? Like those kind of job? Why not? I go and I try to accomplish a bit something maybe harder, but more rewarding and something that I like. But for me, it was a huge jump going from interior design and applying to a master's in information system or user experience. Mm-hmm. So to bridge that, I went to college to John Abbott and I did 8 months of graphic and web design. So strengthened my candidates to for master's.
Okay, well, Go
this was your choice. This wasn't a prerequisite.
No, it wasn't my choice. Yeah, it was my choice because I felt, you know, it's not convincing for the committee to see that I come from a really, like a bit far from technology to do a master's in something very technical. But I'm glad I did it because it, I'm just gonna... talk here about my current job, my part-time research assistant that I'm doing now.
Yes.
A lot of it are skills that I learned in that collegial year, that college degree in graphic and web design. So a lot of it I'm using now in my research assistant role. So this is where I say faith and trust the process. If I had to think of it before, I wouldn't say it's going to add much value to what I'm going to do on the long term, but actually it did.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And it's very it's very funny because you didn't know at that time. You didn't know that you will be a research assistant,
exactly.
I should say, using the skills that you are doing at John Abbott. So
exactly.
That's very beautiful. Yeah, I had a question in mind, but I completely forgot it. But Judy, do you want to say anything? I'll try to remember it.
Yeah, try to remember your question. I'll continue on with what you said, like with the fact that you went and studied here in college, because a lot of people feel like, oh, college is like a big process, not like the best thing you can do. And you going to it and trying despite, like, you know, you don't know how it works. You don't know how the Canadian system works. You went to college, which is way different than what's similar to university, but also different. And it's a different type of studies of what you studied in Lebanon. How were you able to manage between like to actually to be able to study in a different
setting?
Yeah, setting. It's a completely different setting. And like since you, when you went back, it had been a while, right? Since
yes.
You studied.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the first things that encouraged me was it was a very intensive but a very short program. So it wasn't like a 2-year program. I said to myself, it's a good investment. It's 6 months. And at the time, there was a program called Pratique. So I did the math. I remember I took out my copybook and I did the math. It was like we call it subventionné. It was paying as if I was working almost three quarters of a salary. So I say, why not? Let me try my luck. And it was also competitive to get in because there was a lot of demand. Mm-hmm. So when I got the acceptance, I saw it as a sign. I saw, okay, maybe that is for me. Let me try those 6 months and see where it goes from there. Mm. And it was a very good experience. I made a lot of acquaintances, and it was a very enriching program. And I want to stress here the education in Middle East in general, but in Lebanon is a very, very a good level, because when I came to Canada, I didn't find it hard academically. On the contrary, I felt I had a good base. I was well prepared. So that helped a lot as well. Having studied there all my school years and undergrad made me well prepared to continue studies here in Canada.
Mm-hmm. So you would say the Canadian university college system is similar to the one in Lebanon?
It is different in ways, but there it's a lot intense. So I prefer here. I feel it's more balanced, but it gives you a good preparation. That's for sure.
Definitely. Yeah. No. That's yeah. And some people will didn't know that, right? Some people who are listening to us, they might have a different view on like the educational system in Lebanon. So that's very interesting to know and to learn more about. Yeah. And what would you say to people who want to pursue graduate studies here in Montreal, especially for Arab women and who came here, recently or a few years ago, and you know they feel stagnant, they feel they're doing the same thing. What would you say to them and to maybe encourage them or to give them advice if they are thinking of pursuing future studies such as graduate studies?
I would definitely encourage them, especially as women. Having a higher education is like a passport. It doesn't only serve you where you are. Any place in the world, it can serve you. So you do it for you, you do it for your kids, you do it for your family. It's only rewarding. If you look at the long-term benefits, okay, it may be difficult or tough a year or two, but on the long-term, it's very rewarding for everyone in the family. So I would definitely encourage them.
Yeah, it's a big investment, and I think it will take a lot of time. I'm sure it takes a lot of time. So so it's definitely something that is highly rewarding at the end. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have any more questions, Judy, about
I have a question, but it's related to your identity, basically. Do you feel your identity has changed or shifted since you moved to Canada? And if yes, in what ways did it change? Because you moved because you said you lived your whole life in Lebanon and then you came here. So was there any cultural shocks? What did you do?
Say, I adapted, I accepted, I integrated, but my identity, it remained my identity. The Arabic part in me, it remained, or it, if you want, it grew stronger, because the more you are far from your home, the more you want to listen to Fairuz, the more you want to cook your home, your dishes back home. And I feel as a mother, I have this urge to show it to my kids, to preserve it. So it's part of me that I cherish so much, and it runs in my blood. I love my roots, and I'm proud of it. Media shows all the negatives in our Arab world, but it's really the most beautiful heritage that anyone can have. I'm subjective here, but I truly feel blessed to come from that part of the world.
I think we're also very subjective also. we're doing a show on Arab culture and Arab music and showing the richness of Arabic culture, so we're kind of whispering that the Arabic heritage is one of the best. So
I agree.
So we're doing the same.
Yeah, like we're always talking about food, about our culture, about our people, about like the things that we have. So
when my friends ask me that are not from that culture, like what's so special, I'm like, where do I begin? The food, the dance, the music, the fashion, where do I begin?
Yeah, it's very rich in so many ways, in art and on food and like so many ways.
Music.
Music. Exactly.
And it's also exciting to share this knowledge to people who might not know it, like your friends or people who are listening or anyone who is involved. Like it's always, I feel so motivated to share what I know, even if it's not as much, because I've never lived in my countries before. So the stuff that I know through family and through media and through my mother, like really, I'm glad to be able
that's
to share.
That's beautiful.
Continuing on that, like have you ever felt that you were out of place in Canada, since it's way different, or no, like is it
the first few years I felt like I would give this analogy to my mom, let's say, that you know, you put the cactus in snow. I felt like I'm out of place, I don't belong here. But you grow roots where you are. You grow roots. And what I mentioned before, being proactive, I felt I have to step out of my comfort zone. Try to talk to strangers that are in my community. Try to do play days. And for example, now studying in HEC, my master's, I made a lot of friends. And it fills your life with good things, having friends, having community, and then you feel you belong more and more. So as much as you give it energy and time, it gives you back. It's like a cycle.
Do you think the secret is also trying to embrace both sides, so your Canadian identity and your Lebanese identity? Do you believe that it's important to embrace both of them in order continue and move on and stay motivated?
Of course, and you have to see all the benefits that we have in Canada that we don't have maybe in our hometown. Let's say how free we are to speak, to express. Let's say when I go to museums here, I really like to see the art, to embrace all the lovely things. When I go downtown, I went downtown last week with my kids. It's beautiful, all that diversity is here. So yeah, you have to look all of the beauty of it as well, because even back in our country, we have a lot of negative things. So. So we have to keep our eye on the beautiful things, and that would make us more and more, you know, belong more and more to where we are.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I feel like blending both identities makes you who you are, and like, you know, encouraging also the beauty that Canada has to offer, and keeping your roots also at the same time makes you who you are. So that is a very beautiful cultural blend that I'm understanding. So yeah, definitely. And also you mentioned to me that you like Arabic music.
Oh, I love. I'm a big lover of Arabic music. Huge.
Specifically Tarab?
Yes. A bit unconventional. Yeah. I like older Tarab, you know, like Umm Kulthum, Werda Jazairiya.
I honestly didn't like them when I was younger, but now I'm liking them more. It's like something that you get to, you get, become in love with. When you get older. So I definitely relate to that. Could you maybe explain to anyone who's listening what is Tarab? Because I didn't know what it was. I know who's Umm Kulthum and people who use that type of music. But if you could explain it to us quickly, what it is for anyone who doesn't know.
So Tarab is mainly Arabic music, but mainly the music Tarab is, you call it a state on Tarab. It's like a verb and a state where it's like transcending, emotional transcending. So all Tarab music are long pieces of music. And if you look at, let's say, Umm Kulthum music, you have different chapters in one song of 30 or 40 minutes. So you go part of and part of in it as a story. And back in the time where Tarab was really famous, it was mostly radio. It wasn't a visual TV. So people had the patience and a cleaner ear if you want to listen to those long versions. And it was a great time of poetry and music. So it was those three. The great vocals with the great poetry and great music. So it takes, as you said, Mariam, it's an acquired taste. So once you love it, you will find yourself listening to it. It's magical.
And when did you start, listening to Tarab? Maybe when you were younger, or did you acquire it later on, or when you were young? Okay, so in your family.
My dad used to play it. At first it was like, I want those, English Western songs. It was too boring, too long. But I remember the first time I had like a crush, the first crush you have in your teens. And I felt myself relating to those lyrics, and I grew to love them from that time.
You start getting emotional, and connecting with you.
Good things about like these sort of music is like the lyrics that they use or the words that they use are very deep words and deep that very has poetic. Very deep meanings. That makes you like fall in love with, and just the fact that it takes you on a journey too, so you're hearing like a story that you want to have as well, in a way.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
Do you usually listen to the full thing or do you skip? Let's see.
When I have time and I'm in the mood and I'm not bothering anyone else, I'll put the whole thing. When I'm in the car with my family, I'll put, the trendy stuff so all of them would enjoy. But let's say I'm cleaning the house and I have like 2 hours of work, I'll put one song and it will pass by very fast.
Because what I do usually is like I would skip, for example, I know one of Umm Kulthum's song, Alf Layla Wa Layla. I know that at minute 7, this is when the music would stop and she would start singing.
Yes.
So every time I started, I don't want to listen to like 7 minutes of just the people intro. Playing music, the intro. I would just skip it to this moment so I can listen to the song,
It's a very nice what feelings, way. And what feelings do you get when you listen to Tarab? And Judy, maybe you can answer it later, but the main person who's being interviewed, what feelings do you get when you sing, when you listen to Tarab,
It takes me back like nostalgia, back in time. It also depends what's the mood of the song, because it can range extremely in Tarab to happy and love feelings, to feelings of broken hearted despair, to feeling of hope. So whatever the mood I'm in, I'll put something that resembles that the mood I am in that moment. So it's a wide range of feelings. I can't pinpoint something, but in general it takes me back home to where I grew up, like a feeling of nostalgia.
It's a transcending feeling, like a moment of not being here, being somewhere else.
Exactly.
I think that's what you feel. So that's very, that music is very hypnotizing. That's how I describe it.
It
really
is.
Like puts you in a certain mood and kind of you forget if you really focus and you really be there, you kind of forget where you are in the moment. So yeah, that is very beautiful. Yeah.
What's your favorite song from Tarab? And if, like, your favorite song, does it, what does it remind you of when you listen to it?
My favorite song is Al Atlal by Kulthum. And I have another one, Ya Garat Al Wadi by Noor Al Huda. So those two songs remind me of my father because he used to love them and we used to listen to them a lot together. So it takes me back, you know, back in the days. They are my two favorite songs and they are beautiful pieces of music. I encourage you to search and find them and listen to them. They're wonderful, wonderful, yeah.
Yeah, we would love to also play them maybe in our show. That'd be amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Scarlett, for today's interview and participating with us on the Voice of the Voiceless. I was very, very happy to have you. I wish we could have done this in person, but due to the circumstances and we live far and things like that, it's easier for all of us to do it by call. So yeah, so thank you very much, Scarlett. I'm glad that you were able to be part of our show, and we're very excited we will still be very excited to get to know you more, and hopefully everyone learned more about you and your journey and how you balance everything together. You do it so bravely and so gracefully, and I applaud what you do, and I see you come to class and you really work hard, and also, you know, I can see that you love your daughter, so, you know, blending all of that is sometimes not easy, but I really applaud you for that. So
thank you so much. It means a lot to me, Maryam. And thank you, Judy. I was honored to be here today. And thank you for having me. It was a great experience for me as well.
Awesome.
Thank you. Thank you so much. As Mimi said, like, it really explains everything all the time, super perfectly. So I can't re-explain. I want to tell you one thing. Like, can you... To end the show, if you can say one thing that to your younger self or to the young woman out there or mothers or something that would inspire them, what would it be?
It would be patient and be hopeful. Those two words will carry you through any stage in your life. Be patient and be hopeful for the better days.
Mm-hmm. And I love that it resonated throughout the interview, these two mm-hmm. words. Yeah, it always came back. So that's very beautiful to hear. Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, everyone. Thank you for listening.
So you are listening to The Voice of the Voiceless on CJLO 6090 AM. Make sure to tune in every week, Monday at 6 p.m. Same station, same time, same day. And hopefully you like the show, and feel free to message us on Instagram or through our email. That is also included on the CJLO website. Thank you all, and we hope to see you and to provide what we do next week.
Thank you.
All right, bye. How do I stop the recording?
Bravo.
Bravo. Yes, bravo.
Hey, go to the 3 points more, record, stop recording.
Yeah. Okay, perfect.
How did we-